Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This story is 5 years old. It came out 2 hours before a debate. It's a typical political hit job.
The Giuliani accounting story, is it a big deal? Were the former mayor's unusual accounting practices a way to cover up his adulterous affair or something more routine? Again, the mayor's office charged NYPD security expenses for the mayor and others to other city agencies, and the NYPD later reimbursed them. Some of these expenses were for his trips to the Hamptons to have his extramarital affair with Judith Nathan. So let's examine the evidence a little more closely now that this has been around for 2 days and the former mayor has had a chance to react. And we will also look in a few minutes to Iowa and New Hampshire and South Carolina. We'll have reporters from all three early primary states to see if this story is gaining traction where it matters most. With me first, New York One political director Bob Hart and Ben Smith from Politico.com, who broke the story. Hello, Ben. Hello, Bob. Welcome back to WNYC. Hey,
good morning.
So the central question here, it seems to me, Ben, is did he use these accounting practices to cover up the affair, or were they routine in his administration? Do you agree that's the central question?
Yeah, it's certainly a central question, why they were doing this, you know, why they were using the strange accounting that neither his that Koch and Dinkins didn't use, and both people, Koch himself, people in his administration objected to, and that Bloomberg doesn't use. And they haven't answered, you know, they really haven't answered it. They've said that unnamed bookkeepers, which really wasn't how the Giuliani administration worked. It was a very...
Unnamed bookkeepers. Unnamed bookkeepers did what?
Decided that instead of billing the stuff to the mayor's office, they would do it through these very obscure city offices, like the Office of Assigned Counsel and the Loft Board.
The explanation that former Deputy Mayor Joe Loda made on our program last night, Brian, was they wanted to find a way to expedite the payments to these police officers who were in the mayor's detail, that if they waited for the NYPD to reimburse them, for them being reimbursed, it would take too long. So this was a way for them to expedite the payments through the mayor's office. So that's their
right. And the mayor himself, former mayor, said that pretty much too on the CBS Evening News. Here's that clip.
The police department paid for all of these expenses. But since the police department would sometimes be slow in payment, City Hall would pay it first, and then the police department reimbursed every single penny of it.
So setting aside the question of why... Ben, go ahead.
Just to speak to that really quickly, I mean, that seems reasonable, but it just doesn't answer the question at all of why, instead of billing it through the mayor's office, it went through these very obscure offices.
Right, but my question is what it is, because the biggest argument in the mayor's favor, it seems to me, having heard him and then going back and reading your original story, which was reported in exquisite detail, I have to say, is that these kinds of accounting practices, billing police expenses to obscure other city agencies, were widespread. By your numbers, hundreds of thousands of dollars on many kinds of travel, mm-hmm. predating his affair with Judith Nathan and involving all kinds of other things. Is that accurate?
No. Well, we don't actually, I haven't seen, and City Hall, you know, can't instantly produce the documents from before the summer of 99, which is when the stuff I requested starts.
So the question of predating, we don't know if they did this before.
But the comptroller said the travel expenses went up very sharply, and a big chunk of the expenses, the stuff with Judith Nathan is a relatively small share. A big share is campaign-related travel.
But that's an important part, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because, again, go through
and
these numbers.
And that might also be something that the administration wasn't eager to have stories written about.
Right. But give me your numbers. How much money was presumably spent on security for his trip to the Hamptons in this accounting practice style, and how much on other things?
Oh, you know, probably a total between 10,000 and 20,000. If you don't count the police salaries.
On the Hamptons.
So maybe $1,000 a trip if they stayed in a hotel.
Out of,
it was stuff that was dealt with this way was between $400,000 and $500,000. Some of it was totally straightforward Office of Emergency Management officials going to emergency management conferences. A lot of that was accounted for much more straightforwardly. And then a lot of it was campaign travel.
Right. But then the mayor's people say Therefore, it was not an effort to cover up this specific travel out to the Hamptons to see Judy Nathans, because even if it was a shoddy accounting practice, it was something that they were doing for all kinds of things. So the issue of cover-up then becomes settled, they argue.
The comptroller's issue, what the comptroller was sort of, I thought, signaling in that letter was that it seemed like they had disguised the escalation in travel costs. And there may have been a number, I mean, you know, we're speculating on their motives, and I'm sort of to some degree uncomfortable doing that, but there may have been, they may have not wanted stories written about escalating travel expenses for a number of reasons.
Bob Hart?
Yeah, I mean, Ben has an interesting point. I mean, we are speculating, but this was a mayor who prided himself on almost never leaving town, doing you know, public events with the media almost every single day. And suddenly in 1999, he's going up to Utica and meeting, you know, with Republican officials for, you know, a later aborted Senate campaign. Perhaps it was not necessarily a cover-up about an affair, but a cover-up on suddenly the mayor who's never out of town is suddenly out of town a lot more. And again, this is just speculation, but that's something, you know, I covered him then in City Hall, and, you know, the impression was that the mayor never left when, in fact, sometimes he was leaving town.
Right. Now,
these trips, the trips to the Hamptons, unlike the campaign trips, were not noted on his schedules.
Listeners, do you care about this? We can take some phone calls, and then, as I said, we will go to Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina and talk to political reporters there. And find, you know, this may have political resonance beyond the facts of the story, and we'll talk about that. But we have a different call-in line today. Our usual lines are down, so if you want to call in on this and say this is a big deal or not, 212-227-7606, 212-227-7606, or call in line for today, 212-227-7606, for Ben Smith from Politico.com, who broke the story, and New York One political director Bob Hart. Bob, I read in one of the papers that Donna Hanover was getting NYPD security as First Lady at the same time that these other things were going on, and in fact, at the same time that Judy Nathan was getting some security detail. I mean, that itself is a story, but is that any kind of defense for the mayor if security for Donna Hanover was billed the same way?
I think it would be a very strong defense if they can point to that and say that. I definitely do. I think part of the problem, and Ben can speak to this much better than I, is reading Ben's initial story, he seems to have been completely stonewalled by the Giuliani people. And we asked Joe Lota about this last night, and he really didn't have a good answer. You know, they offer a lot of these explanations. Some of them seem quite reasonable. Why not speak to Ben and offer some of that?
I think a lot of reasons you might not speak to a reporter. The city comptroller, in a very, you know, who's a formal agent charged with overseeing this, asked directly, and in his words was stonewalled. And that's sort of what raises a flag in a certain way.
And here is New York City Comptroller William Thompson speaking to WNYC yesterday.
They don't do that this way. All city agencies reflect their expenditures directly through those agencies, not in other agencies and not in subdivisions.
All right.
Wasn't his pithiest quote yesterday.
Oh, well, that's the one we got. Well, we have one more. Let's see if this is his pithiest quote.
I believe in transparency and openness, and this is a less transparent way of doing business and one that makes it harder to follow the dollars.
Not pithy at all.
the thing that kind of puzzles me, Brian, is if they were going to do the accounting practice this way, why not just pick one mayoral agency? Why spread the wealth, you know, so to speak, through these different, you know, obscure mayoral agencies? That's the thing that really puzzles me. Why not just have a certain fund and, you know, even call it the reimbursement fund or something, you know, something simpler
right.
than using, you know,
right.
more than
so,
one.
Yeah, so we enlarge the original question that I asked at the beginning and say, was he doing it to try to cover up a variety of kinds of travel that may have been seen as politically untenable? Fair enough?
Yeah, I mean, you know, what strikes you when you do the numbers is that in each of those years, a number like 150, 160, 180,000, which is sort of a normal, I guess, number for out-of-city travel, was billed on the mayor's line. And then it was the rest that was stuck in other places. And so you get the sense that they may not have wanted somebody saying, hey, look, travel expenses are up. What's going on with that? And starting to poke around.
Let's see what some listeners think. Phil in Putnam County, a captain in the fire department. Is that right, Phil?
Yes, that's true. As far as payroll for individual payments, every officer fills out a payroll sheet for the people every week. And even for unusual things like Fire Prevention Week at Rockefeller Center, which is a normal thing, we send in those reports, and everybody gets paid within 2 weeks. That was my experience with the fire department for payroll expense, with salaries.
And so how does that inform the story, in your opinion?
Well, I think this is very unusual, what Giuliani is saying. That doesn't ring true to me. You know, it's I don't see why he would change his rules. Well, anybody would, because, you know, the payroll's in effect forever. You know, it doesn't change.
Phil, thank you very much. And David in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, David.
Hi. I'm calling because I'm a Republican. We had a meeting last night, and the general feeling was...
You mean the New York City or state Republican
city.
Party? Okay.
Yeah. And the general feeling last night was that everybody goes to the Hamptons anyway. That's not outside of the New York orbit. It would be unusual if you didn't go there. It just, at least in my part of town in Manhattan, that's the way it's thought. Generally, the thought was that this is just an attack for or a way of showing up marital infidelity for the primary. I don't think the nation's going to care about it in the general, but it just seemed to all of us that it was one of his opponents, perhaps Romney, trying to do something. And there's not a lot to be upset about because he did everything that everybody does anyway in terms of doing things above board.
Thank you for your call on that, and I'm going to get a reaction after I play what the mayor himself said on CBS News last night about this, putting it in sharper terms than David just did.
This story is 5 years old. It came out 2 hours before a debate. It's a typical political hit job.
So, Ben, this is your story on the timing of its release just hours before the debate. He called the timing a political hit job. Talk about your timing.
Yeah, you know, I don't really understand why they're going after the story like this. They haven't actually questioned a single fact in it, asked for a correction, anything like that. I filed a Freedom of Information request for the comptroller's letter in June, then filed a request with City Hall a month later. Once I had the letter, got the documents back. You know, I guess last week or the week before, called Giuliani's office on Monday. I mean, you know, that's just how these things work.
Well, but you released it just hours before the debate. And, you know, maybe you both want to weigh in on, maybe you feel as journalists that there's a responsibility to release this and other kinds of new information about candidates in a place where it will matter, in a part of the news cycle where it will get picked up and where he'll get asked about it, however minimally, by Anderson Cooper, you know, rather than burying it. Or maybe there's some discussion in newsrooms about whether that's fair. And so what do you think there, Bob, do you think there's a principle here to follow as journalists?
Well, I know the Los Angeles Times, when Dean Baquet was over there, he faced some of this criticism about some of the pieces they did on Schwarzenegger. Right before one of the elections, I forget which one, if it was the recall or the actual election. Newspapers have had problems with this issue. They've really I know the New York Times is sometimes very loath to do anything extremely critical 2 days a day or two before the election. But I think in a day of a debate, I think it's fair game. I don't think this is somehow going to radically tip the debate. The balance in the debate or anything like that. But it is an issue that newspapers and television stations and now the web definitely struggles with back and forth, I think, sometimes.
Yeah,
and was there...
It's always just as quick as possible. I mean, to be honest, I had gotten wind that the New York Post was chasing it, and I was frantic to get it up as soon as we could and wanted to have it up that morning.
Now, there's a story. That'll be on Gawker. But the other point that the caller raised, that this may have been planted by Romney, any plant from any other camp involved in this?
Sorry, it was planted.
Were you tipped to anything by any other camp?
I actually hate to. I don't think reporters should answer those questions, because if I said no this time and then next time I didn't answer, it would be a problem. But I covered City Hall in New York for 5 years. I have lots of sources here, probably better ones than Mitt Romney does, and I filed these Freedom of Information Law requests myself.
One more call. Marianne in Astoria. Then we're going to go to South Carolina, New Hampshire, and Iowa and see if this is getting political traction outside of New York. Marianne, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Oh, hi. Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I think what Giuliani did was wrong. I think the reporting is right. Giuliani has been trying to put a lot of things under the rug, and finally we're getting some information on some of the things that he's doing that have been wrong. The fact that Bernard Tarrick came out this morning in the New York Times and immediately defended what Giuliani did makes everything suspect. So I think the reporters have to continue, and Giuliani should not be exempt from last-minute information that comes up to cloud a little bit of his reputation.
Marianne, thank you for your call. Ben Smith, we're going to let you go. Thank you very much for coming on with us 2 days in a row on this story of yours.
Thanks so much for having me.
Ben Smith from Politico.com. Bob Hart, New York One political director, will stay with us as we do a round robin of early primary states and see if this is gaining political traction in a minute. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Brian Lehrer and WNYC. Our online video picks for this week are up on our website. Every week we choose five videos from the web that we think you may be interested in, and I anchor them in a picks video. This week's picks include the Mike Huckabee Chuck Norris ad that we played the audio from this week, and we want to incorporate your video picks. Send us a link to any issue-oriented or political video that you want to share. Email brianlehrershow@wnyc.org. Put the word video in the subject line. We also have some clips up there from some of my recent interviews here. Cameras were in the studio for Naomi Wolf, who was comparing the United States today to Weimar Germany, very controversial segment, and also when Reverend Billy from the Church of Stop Shopping was here on the day before Thanksgiving. You can see some video of Reverend Billy in action in our studio at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. We continue with Bob Hart, executive producer and political director for New York One, and now we will start a quick round robin around the early primary states to see if the Giuliani accounting practices story is gaining political traction. With me first is Josh Rogers, State House correspondent for New Hampshire Public Radio. Hi, Josh. Hello from New York.
Good morning, Brian.
Is this a big story in New Hampshire?
Hard to say at this point. The original Politico story was run above the fold in the Manchester Union Leader, which is the state's only statewide paper, on Thursday morning. And yesterday, the Giuliani campaign did have some surrogates up here stumping, former Massachusetts Governor Paul Cellucci and a former treasurer, and, you know, their mission was to criticize Mitt Romney's fiscal record.
But they've got a former Massachusetts governor stumping for Giuliani.
Yes, and they spent pretty much all their time answering questions about the security billings.
Really? So this came up from reporters, at very least.
Were
there any campaign events with the public, and if you could gauge whether this was on people's minds?
I think it's hard to say. You know, Mayor Giuliani's main stress up here, or one of them, has been on his management of New York's finances. So, you know, this potentially throws a wrench in that to some degree. But it's really hard to say. I mean, voters here, I mean, this is obviously big with the press. You know, if there's more to the story, you know, particularly any direct role in the irregular accounting, then, you know, maybe it's an issue. You know, voters here haven't traditionally tolerated dodgy bookkeeping, but they do tend to give people a pretty wide berth when it comes to their personal lives.
Do you think that it might not matter so much what every jot and tittle of the accounting story is, if it just has that ring, though, of questionable accounting practices in conjunction with an extramarital affair?
Well, there's something to that, certainly, but it's hard to know. I mean, this is not new news, precisely. I mean, the revelations are, but Mayor Giuliani goes around saying, you know, I'm not perfection, I'm not perfect.
Right.
I mean,
people knew about the affair.
Yeah, this doesn't help him.
Was it in the Union Leader again today?
It was not in the Union Leader today.
All right. Josh Rogers from New Hampshire Public Radio. Thanks a lot.
Welcome, Brian.
And we go next to Janine Beck, who is political reporter for Iowa Public Radio. Hi, Janine. Hello from New York.
Good morning.
Are people talking about this in the press in Iowa?
Well, it is in the paper. It was in the paper yesterday. It was below the fold, but it was on the front page. And then it was in the paper again today, both times in the new the Des Moines Register. And today it was right inside the front page, and it was a news analysis versus a story, but talking about whether this would hurt him on the campaign trail. I haven't spoken with many voters about it yet because Republicans were here earlier this week but have not been here late this week, so I haven't been in an event with a Republican candidate since this sort of, you know, popped back up in the campaign.
Bob Hart, political director for New York One. Anything you want to ask Jeanine Beck from Iowa?
I guess what I would ask is you know, does this issue of, you know, here's a man who has, you know, three marriages and, you know, lived with a gay couple when he was getting divorced and all the dirt that, you know, that we've heard and, you know, the critical, you know, the bumpy personal life he's had, does that matter to voters in South Carolina or is that a pass?
Well, I'm in Iowa, so, you know, here, the voters that are already on board for Rudy Giuliani know his past, and they've decided that they're going to disregard that because they think he's the most electable. I mean, that really comes down to it for those that are behind him. Those that are undecided, though, you know, Iowa has a strong conservative movement, and they have been waiting and seem to be coalescing now around Mike Huckabee, and they wouldn't have supported Giuliani regardless of this story. So I'm not sure entirely yet how much it will hurt him here, because those that are opposed to him would have been regardless, and those that support him already know about his foibles and have decided he's the worthwhile candidate anyway.
Jeanine, are you saying that much of his support in Iowa comes from people who think he's going to be the most electable Republican, even if he may not be their favorite Republican?
I think that's part of it. And also, it's the moderate Republicans that go for Giuliani, the fiscal conservatives who really think that it doesn't need to be all about social issues, but that want a candidate that they believe will be, you know, fiscally prudent and strong, maybe hawkish. And I think they think that he's, after 9/11, the candidate that can look tough on terrorism if we would be attacked again.
And I'm just curious, the news analysis that you referred to in the paper there today, was it written by a local political reporter or was it something from a wire or from Washington?
Yeah, it's from the Associated Press. So, no, it was a wire analysis.
Right. Okay. Jeanine Beck, political reporter for Iowa Public Radio. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And now we go to South Carolina. Leroy Chapman, government and politics editor at The State, the largest daily newspaper in the state of South Carolina. Leroy, who just completed a month of weekly stints with us. Leroy, I bet you didn't expect to be back so soon.
No, I didn't, but I'm glad to be here.
But just for a minute to tell us if this story is gaining traction in South Carolina.
I actually looked around other newspapers, and it hadn't gotten really a prominent mention in a lot of places. So I think the answer to that is no, but he is actually going to be in South Carolina today. He's appearing in the Lowcountry at 11 o'clock, so he will have some media availability, so he'll be able to answer some questions. So I expect if local reporters are going to pick it up, it'll be in tomorrow's editions, and it'll be on TV today.
Right. So you have no reaction from Republican voters, no reaction from the press down there. It sounds like not a very big story so far, but it's set up to break out a little more over the weekend.
Yes, absolutely. Since he's visiting today, and he's got a fundraising event, and he's going to have a town hall meeting at 11. So he will meet with the media, and I think that's when it'll come up, I'm sure.
So, Bob Hart, now you get your chance to ask a question of the South Carolina reporter.
I have no questions. I'm just getting my state straight here today.
All right. So, Leroy Chapman, editor of The State in South Carolina, thanks again.
Oh, sure.
And what do you make of all this, Bob? Now that we've gone around the early primary states, doesn't seem to me like it's that big a thing. It's kind of lurking out there. It seems like it has the potential to really blow up in his face or to die down.
I think it'll be more the latter. I think what this does is people aren't going to be saying, I'm outraged at these crazy accounting practices that Giuliani was using. And I think it's more about reminding voters out there, gee, this guy, you know, has had this bumpy past where, oh my gosh, you know, he had a mistress and, you know, he was going out to seeing her on Long Island. Part of the tabloid titillation factor is that. If this was about, you know, the housing authority, the housing and preservation development under the Giuliani administration, this would not be front page news in the Daily News.
I guess so. Except that, you know, what's new here for me is the public dime aspect of it. You know, there is.
Yeah, but we knew that. We knew. I mean, the Post wrote about this several years ago, that that he was going out to the Hamptons for Judy Nathan. The news is that the money being spent was camouflaged.
Right.
And the question is, was that camouflage done to hide it from reporters, or was it done as a budgetary trick?
That is technically the new news to people like us who follow this every day. But I have a feeling that the general public, while they certainly knew about the affair, this is the general New York public, you know, out there they know even less in the rest of the country. So they knew generally that he had an affair, probably never thought much about whether it was costing tens of thousands of extra dollars to ferry him out there on all these weekends when he used to stay close to home in New York, or whether Donna Hanover and Judy Nathan were getting, you know, security detail on the public dime at the same time. I'm not sure that ever sunk in until today.
Yeah, I still feel that if I'm in the Giuliani campaign, I just don't want Republican primary voters to be thinking about, you know, infidelities and third wives and things like that. And that's what this story mm-hmm. does more than anything. I really think it's less of a fiduciary question, you know, except maybe with New Yorkers, than, gee, this guy, Rudy mm-hmm. Giuliani, was running around a little bit when he was mayor. And I think that's what they don't want voters thinking about when they're heading to the polls in January and February.